Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Maxwell, and my show is Proud to be Different on the Essence of Success Network. Today is today? It's Saturday the 13th. We are almost halfway through December, the last month of the year, and I've got my friend John Bartholomew waiting in the wings. We're going to be talking politics and how we first met in nonprofit organizations and all the cool stuff that we know about of our lives. So the call-in number for after the halftime point is area code 646-727-2914. Again, that's 646-727-2914. And as always, the wonderful and fabulous Nina is in the chat room. So if you've got any questions and you want to discuss in the chat room, she will be there to help out with any other issues you got going on. And so I just wanted to hit up on a couple of things that have happened over the past week. The one thing that's come up in Seattle, at least, is the fact that we are losing ground, literally, in the Pioneer Square area because of BRRRRTHA. Now, for those of you outside the city who are unaware of it, BRRRTHA is the world's largest digger that digs big, huge holes that you can drive through or put buses through or whatever. And this was supposed to help replace the Alaskan Way Viaduct, which has been crumbling and falling for some time. Well, guess what? The Pioneer Square area is where the original fire happened back in the early part of the 20th century, and it caused all of that area to just crumble, and they decided to build on top of it. So it's nothing but dirt and ash and sand and everything else. Not really solid ground to be able to go and start digging a big, huge, massive hole in. So now all the buildings that are there, about 30 of them at this count right now, have lost about an inch worth of height within the year that they've been working on this. Now, BRRRTHA itself broke and has been stuck in the same place, which is costing bucks, massive amounts of money out of our lovely taxpayer pockets. And the city council is sitting by going, well, we didn't know this was going to happen. Well, yes. My thing that I've been saying to everybody is there you can use a lot of cash to shut the truth out of any politician's mouth. So I'm sticking with that feeling, and with the potholes and the sinkholes that are happening in the First Avenue area, it's going to be interesting to see how they fix this mess. So, and the other thing that I was going to mention was I saw this really good piece with all the stuff that we've been having here in the States, in regards to police brutality and the court systems sort of ignoring obvious truths about things. In Thailand this week, there was a picture floating around the internet of a bunch of SWAT team members, a huge amount of them, like 20, 30, something like that, at a peaceful demonstration. And they went and they put all their shields and all their gear and all their helmets down in the ground and sat down in solidarity with these peaceful protesters. This is something you would never see here. And I was just really impressed by it. I thought it was a completely beautiful statement, and we need to have more of it. There you go. Anyway, so I am going to be bringing on my friend Mr. Bartholomew onto the line. And are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Hello, Maxwell.
What up? So a little background story for everybody. John and I have known each other well over two decades, which is kind of scary. We haven't killed each other yet, only because that he lives in Oregon and I live here. and we started out in becoming friends in nonprofits, working with Hands Up Washington, and I was doing work with what was then Northwest AIDS Foundation and then became now recently Lifelong AIDS and lots of other different fun projects like that. And John, I have to say, did a lot for me because I had come from a very small town at that point. I'd only been here about a year or so, maybe 2 years, and he really got me into a lot of stuff like Neil Gaiman, who created Sandman and Good Omens, which, okay, I know it's not a movie, but the idea that they're actually doing the radio show now based on the Good Omens, what do you think?
Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited. I haven't, I haven't been following it too much yet, but I do think, though, that there's this nugget that's going to move towards turning it into a film, because the thing is written like a film.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And for those of you out there who don't know, Good Omens is a brilliantly hysterical book that was written by Neil Gaiman. And who's the other writer?
Terry Pratchett, who's known for the Discworld series, which I haven't read. But the one interesting connection with that is that my recent job with the Alzheimer's Association, Terry Pratchett has form of dementia similar to Alzheimer's disease, and and he's been a vocal spokesperson about the need for funding research on that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that I really liked about that book was the fact that it was very British. It was sarcastic and just very dry and witty and intelligent in the way that it handled its humor. Basically having a bet placed between this angel and this devil and how they would thought the human race would form out. And there's been, since this book came out in the early mid-80s, there's been all kinds of discussion about who should play which character, who could direct the film, all this sort of, it's one of those wish projects, kind of like The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy took forever to make from when the book was originally published because it was one of those dream projects everybody wanted to be a part of, but they could never get to it kind of thing. So I'm interested to see at least how the play is going to go, how the radio show is going to go. The other thing because I am such a music, like, crackhead, he got me into some amazing music. When we worked at this organization called Hands Up Washington, it was during a time when there was an individual nutcase job guy from Oregon.
From Oregon.
Rural Oregon, who wanted to come into Washington State and pass litigation that basically stated that you could fire gay folk from jobs and kick them out of their homes, and basically do all this unconstitutional stuff. So we fought, and it never happened. But part of that process of what we did was he had these connections, and I kind of followed through and helped out with doing what are referred to as information tables, which are setting up card tables with banners and basically talking to the people on the ground about what these hate initiatives were and what this jackalope from Oregon was trying to do, come into our neighborhood and try and mess with our people. And we were talking with kids. We were talking with teenagers, young adults, because we were going to the rock concerts, like at the Moore Theater and that sort of thing. And A, we got to get free concerts, which was cool. B, but two, we really got to educate a lot of young folk, which are now 20 years later adults and having kids of their own, I'm sure, and they're spreading that same sort of inclusiveness of everybody has the right to be alive. So from that point, John, for me personally, was one of the first straight guys that I had been friends with that I had not had any issue around being wary of me because of being gay. And that was a real educational experience for me right there, was that there were folks that were open-minded enough that were kind of cool. And I hadn't had that before. Everybody was like, I don't know, you're gay, you might be trying to jump my pants, blah, 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 blah. And he was just like, yeah, whatever, I don't care. And that to me was amazing. And so I got to participate with him in this organization and do a lot of stuff that I never would have thought of I would have had the chance to do in the past. And he taught me about just great bands that I never really heard that much of, like Cabaret Voltaire, and who are a very political band from the 80s, and such and such bands like that. And so from my experience, from where I was coming from, small town kid, getting to be in the big city, I got to meet people like John, who had come from elsewhere, who didn't originate from Seattle at all, was from the East Coast, and get to see a lot of what I had wanted to see when I was growing up. So from your standpoint, coming to the city, as far as I understood your past, you had actually originated going to UW first, right?
No, not UW first. So I grew up in Pennsylvania, eastern Pennsylvania, near Allentown. And I went to Penn State University and got a film degree. And after I was done with that, you know, if you have a film degree, for the most part, you have to move to a major city to get jobs. And I was not interested in going to Los Angeles, New York City, or Orlando. But at the time, you know, in the early 90s, well, this was 1990, Seattle was a cool up-and-coming place where, you know, bands were coming out of the woodwork. And I thought, well, I had a friend from there that I could stay with for a little while, so I moved to Seattle.
Yeah. And when you moved here, what was the first thing you jumped into? Did you automatically start working as a barista like everybody does? Or how did that work out for you?
When I first came to town, I was working for Washburg, and anybody from most states, there's some kind of a PIRG. PIRG is Public Interest Research Group. They're a nonprofit group that works on issues. They used to work on a lot of environmental issues, but they spun that off to Environment Blank, so Environment Washington, Environment Oregon. PIRG continues to do a lot of stuff about consumer protection, democracy, healthcare reform, et cetera. And so I worked for them for a little while, but then I started freelancing in the film and video world, doing public service announcements, commercials, helping casting agents do stuff. So that's kind of where I got started. But I just I've always been political, with my mother being president of the Allentown League of Women Voters. I just was the kind of person to get involved in the community, and I totally believed in human rights, and that's why I got involved with that Hands Off Washington campaign.
Now, from where you came from with your mom's background and that sort of thing, and you've got how many siblings?
Just my one sister.
Your sister, okay, because I was an only child, and so I'm always like, how many people did you have to fight for that turkey dinner for? So from your growing up and that sort of thing, what was your experience through the 80s? Because we're generally around the same age bracket, growing up in Pennsylvania with being around gay folk. That was something I'd never known about.
Yeah, no, it's
kind of interesting because I would say that when I was in junior high and high school, up to like 86, I was kind of your typical American guy living in the suburbs at that time. You know, I might have cracked gay jokes all the time, or if other people cracked a joke, I would have laughed along with it, not really understanding it. And I think that's the key thing. So when I got to college and, you know, I met people who were out of the closet, I'm like, oh, well, you're a cool person. So, all right, whatever. And for me, it was a nice little shift. And maybe my parents had a lot to do with me just being an open-minded person. I'll give them both credit for that. But I think that just people meeting in real life, people who are different from them, that's one of the key things that creates understanding.
Yeah. Now, from where you and I met and became really good friends, I'm, for all intended purposes, for all those out there listening, he's basically like my heterosexual life mate. He is like, I am, he is Kevin Smith, and he is my Jay. So,
wait, which one am I now? Am I Jay or Silent Bob?
You're Jay. I'm Silent Bob. I'm the fat one.
You know, I am. Yeah, you're Silent, my butt.
I don't know. It's kind of hairy. His butt, by the way. Maneuvering through the nonprofits that we have, which I would have happily stayed working in nonprofits, but there's a reason why it's nonprofit, because you can't make a living out of it. And especially once we got into a certain presidential era for 8 years, nobody was making any money off of anything. So it just had to split off and go into like regular work and whatnot. You met a wonderful, fabulous individual by the name of Tracy. I love her dearly. She walks on water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does.
And and you guys got hitched. And then how from that point, if I can remember, because my brain is, I'm old and fuzzy, doesn't quite connect down to Portland. You guys automatically moved down there at some point, right?
Okay, so from Seattle, so actually I moved down to Tacoma to work for Planned Parenthood for 3 years. The end. Yeah, so my last big hurrah in Seattle was 1997. I actually ran for Seattle City Council, and thank you for all your help on that campaign, Maxwell.
Oh, yeah, I would shut up.
And then after that, it drew the attention of, I mean, I was the youngest candidate running, and while I got my ass handed to me, I was considered like, ooh, an up-and-comer kind of guy, and
mm-hmm.
Planned Parenthood hired me, but they needed me in Tacoma, so I moved down there. It was during that time that I met Tracy, and from there, we discussed moving back to the East Coast. So I worked hard to find a job on the East Coast, which is back then, before there was much internet. I mean, you could do emails, but, you know, and a few crappy websites. I eventually did manage to land a job with the state of New York in Albany. That
mm-hmm.
sucked. It was not good. I quit after 3 months. It was such a horrendous experience working for that large a bureaucracy. So I ended up working for Citizen Action of New York, working on campaign finance reform issues as well as funding for after-school programs. And during that time, Tracy was finishing up her Bachelor's of Social Work degree.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew that we didn't want to stay in Albany, so we looked around the East Coast and decided to move to Portland, Maine, which was a pretty cool place. I miss all my friends there. It was really wonderful. But it was also a small town, very harsh winters. And
So we're together. Campaign finance reform for two different organizations, including Thompson Thomas and CM.
Okay, John, speak a little bit closer to the phone. I'm having a hard time. Hello?
Okay. Yeah, can
there
you
go.
Me?
Sorry.
Okay.
Thought I lost you for a second. Okay. Harsh winners.
So Portland, Maine, but then we decided after Tracy finished her master's of social work that really the Pacific Northwest was drawing us back. And so found work
originally
back here.
She's from Washington, right?
Yes, she is.
Okay.
Yep, Eastern Washington, near Pullman.
Sorry.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, I can hear you.
Okay. But, yeah, so she's from near Pullman, Washington. And and so the Northwest was closer to her home, too.
Yeah. And so you ended up in Portland, and I know you've worked in a couple of different organizations. The most recent that have been really impressive for me is that you worked as the – see if I can get the title right – the spokesperson for the Oregon branch of Alzheimer's education, correct?
A little bit off. It's it was a public policy director at the Alzheimer's Association. Alzheimer's Association Oregon chapter. And one of the big things we did there was we coordinated a lot of other stakeholders to create a state plan for Alzheimer's disease, which you know, some of it is private sector, some of it is nonprofit, some of it is government. How do we make sure that we can provide resources for people and their families dealing with Alzheimer's disease now, and also, what can we do in the future to, get rid of this horrible disease? And a lot of the stuff that we put in that plan has now been implemented, and some of it's just going to be ongoing for a long, long time. But we made some serious advances there.
Cool. Because I know at least two or three people in my life currently who have family members that are dealing with either Alzheimer's or dementia or some level of the disease that they have to pay for. Caregivers, whether they come to visit or they stay in-house with them at all times. And then they also have to deal with the ongoing medical side of it because it's not just a thing where they're forgetful and they hurt themselves. It's a thing where their bodies are basically degenerating. And they're fully not aware of these things. And so they have to be kept on for a while to see how they're doing, make sure that everything's working okay. And so, anything to be able to help keep the money going for organizations like that is much needed. Now, from that point, you jumped up to the AARP, which people are like, well, wait a minute, he's not old. He shouldn't have to work for the AARP. It's like, no, he works for them. He does not get from them. So what do you do with the AARP?
Well, I'm the government relations director, so what I'm doing is a lot of the lobbying or working with government agencies to make sure that, there's laws in place that protect senior citizens, that there's programs that help those people with Alzheimer's, for example, and other people dealing with long-term care. Also, folks like you and me, we're doing this one big retirement security initiative right now, which is all about, you know how like most jobs you have that don't pay well also don't offer 401ks or other retirement plans? And so what this would do is it would set up kind of a state-managed retirement fund that anybody could have a paycheck deduction from. So if you work for McDonald's, you could have 5% of your paycheck go into a retirement fund. And then 6 months later, you move over to Taco Bell,
you can put money into the exact same account from a paycheck deduction. And this should allow more people to save more money for retirement and not be dependent on Social Security, because, frankly, Social Security doesn't go all that far.
Yeah. But now on the opposite side of the coin for that, we've got politicians who are taking out of those much-needed benefits and using them for their own needs.
Well, that's been a fear. Our organization is a very, very strong one, and we've been able to fight back on much of that. I mean, the Social Security fund right now is okay. And Medicare, I mean, get this. This is kind of exciting. There was this expected growth in Medicare spending. It has actually decreased now. Even though you have more and more people getting on Medicare, people are healthier because we're doing a better job early on kind of that public health side of things. Like, you know what? Don't do this, don't do that. And people are healthier, so the costs are going down. And it's very surprising that it's happening this quickly, but we're excited to see that.
Well, I also know that the risks that people are taking with their health are going down as well. Cigarette smoking has gone down a lot with the advent of the vape. I stopped smoking in August, and I use a vape, but I barely use it anymore. When I first was using it in August, September, I was using it pretty regularly every day, and now I use it like maybe three times a week, and it's just oh, hey, it's there. I puff on it, and that's about it. I always carry it with me when I'm out and about, but I rarely use it. And so it's just one of those things where more and more people are using anti-tobacco products, helping people become healthier and will obviously live longer.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that you've managed to stay off cigarettes for this long. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I look forward to you being around for much longer.
Being as cantankerous as ever.
You damn kid, get off my lawn!
Get off my lawn! So the thing that's been really impressive for me watching what you've been able to do is that you have just, no matter whatever you've been working with, it's always been for the sake of people. You've been always the one to stand out and say, there's a need here. This is something that needs to be looked at. This is something we need to work on. We need to help people. And I was raised by, as I always say, I was raised by hippies in Central Washington. And I had a little bit in that I had a little bit of that in me, but then becoming friends with you and spending a lot of time with you as much as I did when we weren't going to clubs gave me sort of that fire of I've always wanted to be able to help people. I always want to make sure that other people's voices are heard when they can't or when they don't feel that they have the availability of being heard, of standing up and saying this person's got the right to be heard as much as I do or anybody else does. So I blame you for that.
Well, I've always tried to do things in such a way where I'm empowering those people who feel like they have no power. And sometimes it's major systemic issues like campaign finance reform, everybody pretty much feels like they don't have a voice in government because people with deep pockets are financing the campaigns. But then at the Alzheimer's Association, imagine you're the spouse of somebody. You've lived with somebody for 50 years, and now they can't remember your name.
Yeah.
And that's where, they're frustrated. They want to cry constantly. They don't know what to do, but then I give them some tools, You know, your voice makes a difference. You telling this to, you know, Senator Merkley might lead to more funding for research so that this doesn't happen to the next generation. And empowerment is part of what I'm all about.
Yeah, and whenever I see news that is out there that's talking about advancements in finding some sort of cure or manageable way of dealing with Alzheimer's or any of the other major illnesses that are out there that we're dealing with. Some weeks ago I had my friend Steve on talking about his son who has my brain just went dead. Sorry. Autism. The leaps and bounds, at least in the past couple of years that we've been able to see of what they've been able to do with autism has been fanatical. I mean, and even on a different level, like when you and I first met, did you think that even for a thought that there would have been such thing as legal marriage between same-sex couples so far across the board? It's not like one or two places. It's not like Colorado, Maine, and us. It's like, what, where more states out there are legalized marriage than aren't? Am I wrong?
Yeah. No, I remember.
I quiver and cry over it. I'm just so amazed that we've gotten to that point.
But when we started about 20 years ago, we were opposing people saying, oh, we're going to ban non-discrimination clauses. We're going to ban gay people from teaching. We're going to make it so that you can't even mention the word homosexual in the schools. And now it's just a completely different world. And it's really kind of amazing to see how far things have come in such a short period of time. But that's one of many, many, many issues. I mean, we still have massive amounts of racism, clearly, in America. We have, basically every ism you got out there is still significant. Things are changing over time. They say that the arc of history bends towards justice.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because now we're at a point in time where there's anybody that comes out and they say, well, we're going to pass a law that says somebody who is speaking of the voice of religion can discriminate against someone, or somebody who is fighting against someone of color can get away with this sort of thing. These days, what I'm seeing is instead of people trying to fight that and say you're wrong, they're saying, why aren't you putting that into trying to find jobs for people? They're getting logical with it, which is brilliant. They're saying, why aren't you spending all this time and energy in trying to help the homeless? Why aren't you trying to make sure that people don't lose what little job they have?
Yeah.
As opposed to trying to fight and take away jobs from people, which makes no sense because everybody knows right now it's all about the economy.
Well, and therein lies a little piece of me that's cynical about why the gay rights issue has moved so far so fast, is that the LGBT population as a whole, I mean, individuals are different, but as a whole is actually financially better than the average population. I mean, when you have the double income, no kids folks, they spend money. And I think that maybe that led to more of the powers that be to go, well, wait a second. I mean, these people are generally well-educated. They have money. Well, we want to sell stuff to them. We value their skills and jobs. So that's the part that I get a little cynical as to maybe that's why we're not seeing as rapid an advancement for racism issues, is that it's a financial thing, and the powers that be don't care.
Yeah. I mean, there is that plus. there's that plausibility. I think that it's, for me personally, my opinion has always been that the level of racism that's rooted in this country is going to take a very long time to get rid of. And it doesn't matter if you have money or not. I mean, look at what's been going on with Cosby for the past weeks now. And everybody's like, oh, Bill Cosby's getting beat on because he's a successful black man and all this kind of stuff. And like one woman says she's been mismanaged by him. And so all these other women are going to come out and try and get some money. I've been hearing stuff about Bill Cosby since the 80s.
Yeah.
And
this is an individual thing.
Albeit it was gossip and there was nothing to stand behind it. It's basically if you're a I can't think what the word is. If you are somebody who goes after specific type of people, then if you've got people scared enough not to stand up for themselves, then you can get away with it continuously. And something that I didn't know about until just a few days ago was he actually had an album out, a comedy album, back in 69 called It's True, It's True, It's True, where he actually jokes about drugging a woman and taking her, as it were. And so I'm kind of like, if this guy has had this in his brain, that this is acceptable. And then these stories keep coming out. And it's not just like with, what's his name, the guy that was the director of the X-Men films, the first two X-Men films, and he did an Unusual Suspects.
Oh, right, yeah.
Last year, he had the situation, or earlier this year, he had the situation where somebody said that they had been molested by him, and then they found out that it was completely untrue. This isn't just one person that's saying it. It's all kinds of different people, all women, all saying the same thing. And it's not people from a certain level. It's people from all kinds of different backgrounds. So I went off on a tangent there. I apologize. but when you have this level of racism that's still very strong in the country, and you have people that you can't look up to because they're flawed for one reason or another, it continues that racism. So I think as much as a strong image that he and his TV show in the 80s was and was needed then at the time, now there's cracks in that armor that make people question and make them question about the African-American community as well. And that's the thing that's a real shame. That's what really scares me when I see stuff like this happening. So, I don't know. It's hard to say because, next week I'm going to have my my friend Chaminet on, and she works in the city politics here. And so I'm going to talk justice and that sort of thing with her. And this is one of the things that I want to bring up, that I want to talk with her about and get her viewpoint on it, because she works in the middle of it. She sees it all. And so for me, I just think that, yes, the idea of living in a society where money is the most important thing, I also want to think that there is the idea that people are changing. People's minds are moving on because younger generations are coming into their own. They are parents now. And we have the ability of saying, like my friend that lives out on Bainbridge Island, she's got two kids. One's a teenager. And my friend supports me. Her husband supports me, and her kids love me. And they're of a generation where in a few years they're going to be adults and they're going to be having kids. And it's just that slowly but surely things are getting better through generational kicks. But that's how I see it. That is my opinion. so I want to jump into the break real quick. We can run off and see the Porcelain Princess for a moment. I'm going to play an old song from back in the day. For those of you who don't know, it's a band called Bronski Beat, back from the 80s. And it's their famous hit song, Small Town Boy, though it is a remix. It's a little bit more upbeat. I didn't want it to be so sad and depressing. But so I will go ahead and put my friend John on mute for a moment and bring the song on and be back in a couple of minutes. Thank you so much for that whole music. It was very lovely. And I have my friend Jen Bartholomew back in line with us. So one of the things that I wanted to touch on with what you're doing now, what's been your greatest experience that you've had so far? I mean, you've only been working there for 6 months.
Oh, not even that. About 4 months.
4 months. Okay. What's been the greatest experience that you've had so far working with the Oregon AARP?
Well, one of the things is just simply that I am working with such a great team of people. They're all really supportive. In a way that it's. You know, so like yesterday I had kind of a lousy meeting, but my boss was there with me. We were meeting with a whole bunch of stakeholders about this issue I was working on, and boy, there was a lot of pushback, and there was a lot of just, you know, red herrings, like just trying to stir stuff up to put us on our heels. And
yeah.
The thing is that Jerry is there to really back me up and let me know that, you know, I'm doing things really well and that here's how we're going to move forward on this. So that's been really, really nice the entire time. But we did have one victory so far that I'm just happy about, and that was just this past Wednesday. The Oregon legislature appropriated about $3 million for certain things that we suggested. And when I say we, it's not just AARP. We've got a coalition of folks, SEIU, Alzheimer's Association, Healthcare Association, a whole bunch of folks working together on issues for seniors and people with disabilities. And we said, okay, there's this little windfall of money. Here's how we think it should be spent. And the legislature pretty much just took our recommendations and ran with it. And so, yay. Yeah.
And I know you had a lot of really positive experiences when you're working at the Alzheimer's. But one of the ones that I have to say was kind of the funniest experiences was when I was still working down at the airline company on one of my breaks. I can't remember if I called you or you called me, but I'd gotten a hold of you, and you were calling from, what was it, the atrium of the Yahoo campus?
Oh, Google.
Or something like that?
Google.
Google. Google's campus.
Yeah.
And you were telling me about how there was this life-size dinosaur bone in metal replica in the middle of their atrium at Google. And I was like, that's flipping awesome.
Yeah. No, that was actually when I was working for OSPIRG, which is the Oregon version of PIRG, and we were working on government transparency issues. And Google was really interested in those kinds of issues, and so they hosted this big meeting, which they actually called an unconference. And they call it that because they bring all the people together, and then the people who show up determine what's going to be on the agenda instead of the other way around, where some people say, here's the agenda, do you want to show up? But the Google campus down there in California, you know, giant dinosaur skeleton thing. They've also got like a little organic garden right in the middle of their campus. It's like,
man,
what kind of, it's a different kind of workplace. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems like all their employees are fairly happy. I've seen stuff on the internet, like there was what did they used to call those things? Back in the day, 2 years ago, when they would have a flash mob wedding proposal, and it was for two guys, and it was in their cafeteria in Google. And it was like regular-looking office people, hipster-looking office people, some punk rock people. I mean, it was a fairly mixed crowd of folks that which surprised the heck out of me that, wow, this is like the search engine for the planet, and these are the folks that work there. It's pretty impressive. And just the stuff that I've seen that the company has done, it sounds incredible. So being able to see that and be down there, I was jealous, just a little. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I didn't really have anything. Sorry.
Oh, well, fine, be that way. What you've been able to do with all the different organizations that you've been a part of, that you've seen, that you've gotten to witness their achievements, what's the one thing that you think that has made you the luckiest? Well, besides being married to Tracy.
Well, that's a good question. You know, it's not so much the any particular achievement at a place as much as getting to meet a lot of great people who have become my friends.
And
yeah.
I feel like I've got this group of colleagues that I work with a lot in Oregon politics that are just fantastic people. And there's folks from Maine who I totally miss. Luckily, one of those people actually moved out here, and I got to see her this week. And then even back in New York, I mean, I miss my buddies Dave and Shauna and those folks from upstate New York. And it's really, I'm lucky to have been around some wonderful, wonderful people over the years. And, you know, yes, we've helped a lot of people in their individual lives. We've helped a lot of people change systems. You know, we've allowed for more people to participate in things like after-school programs or people not having barriers to voting. But at the same time, it's all about personal connections. And I'm just glad that you and I have managed to maintain ours.
Yeah. Like I said, I haven't killed them yet. Well, and I've always said that you've taught me a lot about life that I needed at a time. Because it was, for me, it was in my early part of my recovery period. So there was a lot of lessons that I was still learning. And I always say that I get to a certain point in my life because of the people that are in my life and what puzzle pieces or pie slices they've made a part of is who I am. So, yeah, once again, I just blame you and keep going. One of the things before I forget, because you're coming out of running out of time here, is do you think that you have the ability to give me your opinion or a view of what the White House will hold in the next election? Male or female?
Yeah, actually, I can talk about that a little bit. It's going to be an interesting race. It's not 100% certain whether or not Hillary Clinton is going to run. That said, if she does, she will be the nominee for the Democrats. I mean, I know that there's a lot of folks urging Elizabeth Warren to run, and I love Elizabeth Warren, but I think that it's not her time. You know what I mean? It's there's that system. I mean, if Hillary wasn't running, you know, let's go Elizabeth. But
I agree with the idea that Elizabeth is really positioned to keep doing what she's doing well where she's at.
Yeah.
The amount of work that she does and the slamming the fists on the table in front of the old white guys is what she does the best. And she does really good work. And I adore her. I worship the ground that her Prada shoes walk on. But it's going to be interesting because I think that this is just Hillary's way of sort of making the masses sort of enticed by her saying, well, I don't know, I'm a grandmother now, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it doesn't matter. You're a fit for the job. You're going to do it. You're going to rock it. It'll be the first time in history that we've ever had this sort of thing, not just a woman president, but the idea of a woman president who used to be the first lady, who was, what was her position with Obama when she first started?
Well, she was Secretary of State.
That's a
major responsibility. So, I mean, she was a U.S.
First
senator,
lady,
Secretary of State.
Then,
yeah,
president.
And she's out of the limelight for a little while here in terms of not being part of the insider crowd, which is probably a strategically wise move for her. But let's talk about the other side of the coin, the Republican Party. I don't see that there's a clear front runner there in any way, shape, or form. I keep hearing, you know, rumblings of other people potentially sticking their heads out. I kind of feel bad for Jeb Bush because
he's the smarter, more competent
Bush brother.
Yeah. The I think it's the New Yorker. It was either the New York Magazine or the New Yorker Magazine. I can't remember which one it was. So there's basically three. Romney is ahead, followed by Jeb, followed by Christie.
If the problem with Romney Christie is that he can't win the primaries because he's too moderate.
He would never win to begin with because of his size. Because
we still have a bias there in this country, absolutely.
Exactly. People have a bias, and they would not want to vote for somebody who's heavy set. We are all a bunch of fat people in this country, but we won't vote for anybody who looks like us. And whether or not he could do the job, it doesn't matter. So really, it's coming down to because, what's his name? Dude's son, who...
Rand Paul?
Yeah, Paul is nowhere near it at this point. He's within that bottom 5% of people wanting him. Right now, it's very clear those three individuals are on the top tier. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we'd ever be able to have Romney come into it. I don't know if Fox News has had enough power over the past 8 years to make him look like a viable entertaining person.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really going to be an interesting cycle, and I do feel like the Republican Party is being kind of pulled in two different directions. You have the kind of the Tea Party extremists on one side, and then you have the more traditional, moderate folks that just can't, you know, vote for somebody like Hillary Clinton, but they also can't vote for, you know, a Ted Cruz. So what are they going to do? And is there going to be an emergence of a centrist party? I mean, yeah, we've been talking about this for 30 years, maybe longer, but I don't, it's really going to be an interesting race. And so I'm getting my popcorn ready to go.
I vote my vote, and then I sit back and just watch all the crazies beat each other up.
on all sides of
anyway,
the fence.
Yeah. So we've come down to the end of the show. I appreciate you, John, for being my guest tonight and just babbling away with me. It's been much fun. I do want to remind folks of the upcoming shows that we've got going on. Which is tomorrow is going to be the wonderful show with Lennis, which is her in her Essence of Success Network program. I'm going to take a second to pop up here. I do apologize. I am better well prepared for this, I promise. Okay. So tomorrow at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time is Lennis's psychic reading. And on Wednesday, she has her Hot Topics at 6 p.m. in the studio with Lennis, talking about all things cool and hip and awesome. And then her wonderful Traffic Jam show on Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I just listened yesterday to her Slow Grooves. Had some Chardet in there. It was awesome. Made me very happy. And then I will be back next Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Like I said, speaking with my friend Chaminet, talking about what city politics moves around like and government and all that sort of stuff. So it'll be much fun. So I want to say thank you, John. I greatly appreciate it. It was much fun. Thank you for all the people that checked out the chat room. We've got some good stuff going in there. And I'm going to be closing out the show with a song by a Canadian band called Metric that came out a few years ago called Gold Gun Girls.
I love that song.
I know, isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it's a good one.
So I'll go ahead and put you on mute, John. You can hang out here if you want and listen to the song. And then I will get in touch with anybody who wants to send a message on my Facebook page under Maxwell McGuire, and I can let you know how you can download the song, or download the show, as well as hook up the link later on. So thanks a lot, everybody, and here comes the song.
Everybody else said, I better luck next time. I don't wanna bend, let the bad girls bend. I just wanna be a friend. Is it ever gonna be?